Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Doug Tribou.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Now that the Obama administration has concluded what it calls an historic deal with Iran over its nuclear program, the effort shifts to selling the accord to Congress.
After more than 20 months of negotiations, Iran and a group of six nations led by the U.S. agreed to significantly limit Tehran's nuclear program for more than a decade in return for lifting international sanctions. Critics, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, called it a historic mistake.
But President Obama said the deal will ratchet down the danger of more war in the Middle East, and he called on U.S. lawmakers to approve the deal.
I am confident that this deal will meet the national security interests of the United States and our allies. So I will veto any legislation that prevents the successful implementation of this deal.
Joining us is Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton, a Democrat from the state's 6th District. He's with us as part of our regular series of conversations with members of the state's congressional delegation. And Seth Moulton, welcome back to the program. It's good to have you.
Great to be here. Thanks, Anthony.
So as we mentioned, the action on this deal with Iran now shifts to Congress. So first of all, what's your reaction to the accord? I would expect that you'd want to look at it, but what's your initial reaction? And do you think you're going to vote to support it?
Well, first of all, I've spent some time fighting in the Middle East, and in Najaf in 2004 and in a couple other places, literally faced off against Iranians. And I want to make sure that whatever we do ensures that we can avoid that in the future, not just in the next couple years, but 10 years from now as well. So we have to look at this deal in the context of the alternatives today and also in terms of where it puts us in 10 years. And at the end of the day, we have to ensure that Iran does not obtain a nuclear weapon. It will literally set off an arms race in the Middle East, the world's tinderbox, if Iran gets a nuclear bomb. So taking that perspective, I think that if we can get a diplomatic solution, it's far better than going to war.
That's what the president is saying, that this really ratchets down the risk of war. I mean, do you basically agree with that?
Well, I think it certainly does in the short term, but we have to look at it in the long term as well. We can't have Iran with a nuclear bomb today or tomorrow. We also can't have them get a nuclear bomb 10 years from now.
So what's your feeling about where this deal puts us 10 years from now?
Well, that's actually difficult to tell. In some ways, remains to be seen. So that's one of the things that Congress has got to investigate very carefully over the coming weeks and months. It's not just about whether or not it's a perfect deal. I don't think it's a perfect deal. And we'll hear countless people over the coming weeks tell us all the reasons why it's not a perfect deal. But we live in a real world where we only have the alternatives that are on the table. One is going to war with them and bombing their facilities. That looks like it will only set them back 2 to 5 years, not 10. The other alternative is trying to ratchet up sanctions. And I'm afraid that if we try to do that, the coalition will fall apart.
Hmm. Here's House Speaker John Boehner speaking this morning. He called the deal unacceptable.
It's going to hand a dangerous regime billions of dollars in sanctions relief while paving the way for a nuclear Iran. And this isn't about Democrats or Republicans. It's not a partisan issue at all. It's about right versus wrong. And we're going to do everything we can to get to the details. If in fact it's as bad a deal as I think it is at this moment, we'll do everything we can to stop it.
And as you know, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also calls this a bad mistake of historic proportions. What's your reaction to those kinds of critical voices?
I want to see what they propose as the alternative. I want to see what Speaker Boehner thinks will happen if we go to war with Iran, if that's the alternative he thinks we should pursue. The status quo, if we don't get a deal, is not acceptable. If we don't get a deal and we don't either take military action or increase sanctions, then that paves the way for Iran to get a nuclear weapon. That takes off the table the temporary agreement we have in place that freezes their program. That means that they will start getting access to money from foreign countries that no longer believe sanctions are the way forward. A good example is India. India has tremendous desire for Iranian oil. And we spoke this morning with Ambassador Nick Burns, who under the Bush administration worked tirelessly to get India to agree to sanctions against Iran. And he's quite confident that India will walk away and start doing business with Iran as again if this deal falls apart.
You know, the president is calling this deal historic, and in many ways to think about it in that way is certainly interesting. I mean, when you think back to the hostage crisis back in the 1970s, I mean, this country has been living in a sort of state of cold war, or, you know, almost a hot war with Iran for a long, long time. Do you see this as potentially historic?
Potentially historic, but it could be historically good or historically bad. And the role of Congress over the coming months is to really get into the details here, to understand whether this deal is truly better than no deal. We have to ensure that there are very serious inspections, that we can catch Iran when they inevitably break the agreement. And so those details are incredibly important as we evaluate whether this deal is sufficient.
Congressman, if I could, I'd like to shift gears and ask you about news that broke yesterday about the arrest of a 23-year-old man from Adams, Massachusetts, Alexander Chicolo, who was allegedly plotting to attack an unnamed university with a pressure cooker bomb and several guns. This is the latest story from Massachusetts involving allegations of homegrown terrorist plots. What's your reaction to this arrest and to what this nation needs to do to counter these kinds of threats?
Well, I don't know too much about the case. I just saw it in the Boston Globe this morning. But I commend law enforcement for their swift action. And certainly if it turns out that he is guilty of a terrorist plot, then he deserves to be punished. But this is all the more reason why we also need to get and defeat ISIS where they are, in Syria, Iraq, and the Middle East, and make sure that they don't have the ability to export terrorism here at home. That's why we need a serious strategy for the Middle East, a long-term political and diplomatic strategy, not just a plan for short-term military strikes.
It's interesting to note there was a recent report from an organization called New America that found that homegrown terrorists were perhaps a bigger problem in the country than terrorists coming from abroad. And it found that since 9/11, the attacks of 9/11, nearly twice as many people have been killed by white supremacists and other non-Muslim extremists than have been killed by radical Muslims. So I guess the question is, do you think as a nation we're prioritizing these threats correctly?
Well, I think we're doing the best that we can. You know, we're certainly aware of the homegrown terrorist threat. I think that the FBI is working very hard. And there are a lot of cases that we don't even know about where they've prevented attacks from occurring, but the details haven't been disclosed. But there's no question that there are an awful lot of young people around the globe today who are being inspired by the infamous beliefs of ISIS. And so not having a serious strategy to deal with this terrorist threat in the Middle East can lead indirectly to terrorists growing right here at home.
Well, let me move on. Yesterday, I understand that you marked a significant milestone. Your first piece of legislation passed the House. So tell us about the Microloan Modernization Act. What does it do?
You know, small businesses are the backbone of our nation's economy. Some studies show that nearly all the jobs created in America in the last 10 years come from new and growing businesses. And so it's incredibly important that we support these new firms and the entrepreneurs who are willing to take the risks to start them. And many entrepreneurs need that initial capital to get going because they can't get a major investor because their business isn't that big, but it's too big for funds from friends and family. So there are people caught in the middle there who want to start a business and look to the Small Business Administration's micro-lending program to help. A lot of times these loans are in the range of $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. One of the things my bill does is it raises the limit on the number of loans or the amounts of loans that banks can give out. Another thing it does is it makes lines of credit available to businesses. Some businesses, because of their cyclical or changing cash flow, are really not looking for a term loan but want a revolving line of credit, and previously this wasn't available. So these are some of the things that this reform bill does to take an existing program that's been very successful and has helped start a lot of businesses in America and make it better, more flexible, and more accommodating to business owners today in 2015.
I'd like to ask you to respond to what critics have said about microloans, basically characterizing them as a form of subsidy. What's your response to that?
they're not subsidies. They're loans that have to be repaid. And actually, if you look at the statistics, the default rate on these loans has been going down over the last several years. There's always risk in starting a new business, but we need to encourage people to start new businesses, to take those entrepreneurial risks, because ultimately, when businesses succeed, they lead to new jobs. And if we just try to rely on the economy as it exists today, America is never going to be able to compete in the 21st century, and we're not going to open up new jobs and new opportunities for Americans who are looking for them today.
So, Congressman, it's your first piece of legislation to pass the House. So it seems like a good time to ask you about this. You know, when you first landed in Washington, you and I talked about the paralysis in Washington, the partisan divide. How do you feel about that now in light of, you know, managing to push a piece of legislation successfully through the House?
I'm very cautiously optimistic that things are starting to improve. Now, let's not get excited here. Congress is still an incredibly partisan and divided place. In light of the Iran deal, I brought in Ambassador Nick Burns, who's at the Harvard Kennedy School today and was President Bush's lead negotiator on Iran. He came in this morning to speak to a bipartisan group of my colleagues in Washington. And we had a wonderful debate with the ambassador, talking about the deal, getting into the details. And it was an incredibly heartening conversation because you heard people on both sides of the aisle asking tough questions and really wanting to get to the facts, not talking about the politics, but just getting to the facts to find the best policy. So that is starting to happen a little bit more in Washington. Not enough, but it's moving in the right direction. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that Congress can start to improve.
All right. Well, we'll end there with a bit of cautious optimism from Congressman Seth Moulton. He represents the 6th District in Massachusetts. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us. We're very grateful.
Hey, Anthony, thanks for having me.
And tomorrow we'll hear from Congressman Stephen Lynch.